appropriate for me to ask the question now, or will you indicate it another time? Can I ask it now? I just wanted to know, we were given this pack this morning with the contributions from the various submissions, or should I say the pack with the submissions from the people who've wanted to give their input on the bill. However, I noticed that on our program for today, we only have two presentations by concerned people, and that is the one from, of Kasatu and the one from Salga. And I was wondering about the others. There are about 12 or so, I don't know exactly how many, and why are we only having submission from two before we decide the final fate of this bill? It's very few. Are the others not interested in coming? Have we invited them? Is there no other inputs to be received apart from these two?
Okay, Honorable Olio, the process goes as follows. After the department briefs the portfolio committee on the bill, we then advertise on national newspapers and call for written submission as well as indication for verbal presentation. So we don't necessarily invite. We accept submissions by interested parties because we want to be as open as possible. And we received 18 written submissions. And out of the 18 written submissions, only three organizations indicated that they also wanted to make verbal presentations, and then we respond to them and allow them to come and make verbal presentations. And the reason we are given a package of the written submission is for the discussion and deliberation period of the portfolio committee. When we then consider the bill, having received the written and verbal presentation, we take all of them into consideration. That is why you are given a package. So those that did not request to come and make verbal presentation will still be considered in terms of their written submission. I don't know whether I'm making myself clear.
I understand that you said there were three. We only have two. Who's the third one?
Both of the representatives of the business society.
Okay, are they coming today?
Honorable Alice, they indicated yesterday afternoon that they can't make it. But if, because the presenter has another commitment, urgent commitment that came up, but if there are any questions from the committee, they'll be able to respond to those in writing.
Chairperson, sorry to delay, just one more thing. If they're going to respond in writing, I notice that the schedule of Parliament has us do the second reading debate and vote on Thursday afternoon. How are we going to get submissions in writing from them before Thursday, and we still have to deliberate on the content of this bill? We haven't started with one sentence yet.
We have received a written submission from them. We have it. When we deliberate this afternoon, we'll be using that. And if there are any questions of clarity that we would have wanted to ask from them, we could still do so. And that is what they are referring to when they say they are available to respond to questions. I think that we have an opportunity for them, for ourselves, to ask questions of clarity like we are doing to others, and we have an opportunity for them to respond to us, because we have today and tomorrow to deliberate on the bill based on the written submission and the verbal presentation. Can we then give consultant an opportunity to respond?
Thanks, Chair. I'll start off with the issue of our view on tolling outside of urban areas. I'm surprised that a number of you have stated that, you know, we've never said anything about other tolls. That's not the case. In fact, those of you who are from the Northwest will know that we've had a very intensive campaign, particularly focusing on the Swartruggens toll road, where currently the fee has been increased to, if I'm not mistaken, 72 rand a trip, and it's putting an enormous burden on people in and around Swartruggens. So we've had three or four big protest actions. We've had our province mayor has been engaging with the provincial government as well as with national government. And we've also had engagements in Mpumalanga about the very toll road that has been quoted around Nelspruit. I think what is emerging is that increasingly there is a critical view about tolling in general. But I guess in our presentation, we wanted to confine ourselves to the particular issue which is on the table at the moment, and that is the question of urban tolling and the G-FIPS in particular. And while, yes, we accept that there is a broader issue of tolling, and as I say, we have demonstrated that we've got serious problems with many of the other toll roads, and we believe that we should increasingly, as stakeholders, be talking about the principle in general, but the focus at the moment is, whether we like it or not, it's on the introduction of urban tolling. And the difference, in a way, historically, is that our understanding is that when tolling was introduced on a national road, one of the legal requirements was that there had to be essentially a parallel road. There had to be an obvious alternative that wasn't going to add burdens to the road users. And that's much more complicated in an urban situation. We don't have parallel ring roads, for example, in our urban areas. So I hope that answers that. Just to repeat, we're not quiet about the other tolls. There was a question about what are our proposals for funding. Our primary proposal has from the start been to consider introducing an additional levy on the fuel price. We believe that this is an equitable way of doing things because it means that the more that you travel, the more you pay the tax, as it were. We accept that some people would argue that if I'm in Etegwini, then I shouldn't have to pay on the levy for a road in Gauteng. But you see, the answer to that is that eventually the road improvements will actually get to Etegwini and to Port Elizabeth and so forth. And we have to look at these things in terms of the national good. We have to accept that Gauteng is the industrial heartland of South Africa, and that if things are moving smoothly and effectively in Gauteng, it's going to have a good economic knock-on for the rest of the country. So we believe that, in fact, to argue that people outside of Gauteng should not have to pay through a fuel levy, which wouldn't have to be a huge amount in order to get the payment, to meet the 24 billion. It's something that could easily be absorbed without it unduly burdening any one particular group of people. But in addition, we've said, look, we should be looking at a range of alternatives. Obviously, if we can find a combination of the fuel levy, which is a very, very cheap, administratively cheap system, if we can combine introducing an additional fuel levy together with our one proposal was introducing a new tax bracket, in other words, the top, dividing the top bracket, slicing off the very top and introducing a new tax bracket at a new rate, that could generate additional income, which would not only go to GFIP, but to perhaps to all the infrastructure development projects and other social needs. We've also argued for the introduction of what we call prescribed assets. In other words, something that existed many, many years ago in this country, whereby any investors must invest a certain percentage in government bonds, which could go towards infrastructure. And we've also talked about ensuring that pension funds invest in infrastructure. As it happens, the answer of in the Interministerial Committee when we posed the question of pension funds was that already the bulk of the investments in SANRAL actually come from from pension funds. But that doesn't detract from the general argument of prescribed investments for all investors. So there are, you know, without wanting to take lots and lots of time, there are many ways of doing, of raising the funds without taking from other social needs. There are other ways of doing it which are cheaper and which ultimately would leave more money in the pockets of people to do all of, you know. Our main problem with this ETOL thing is that it is fantastically expensive, and the problem is that we've been unable to get clear statistics from SANRAL and government as to exactly what the proportions are, but all the estimates suggest that out of every rand that is collected, on average over time, 40 cents will go towards just basic administration. So we're not talking about huge amounts being collected to reinvest in infrastructure, whereas with something like a fuel levy and the other vehicles that we've talked about, it's a guaranteed forever revenue source which can be used for sustainable investment in infrastructure. On the question of the exclusion of the legislatures, well, I think, you know, I don't think there's really a question there. I think we would just say, you know, it is a problem. I mean, the very process of parliamentary consultation and legislative reflection, I think from start to finish, has been very problematic. I mean, even the fact that you're sitting today and it's coming to the legislature on Thursday, that seems to be really an impossibly small space of time for you to seriously consider whether you can take the bold step of withdrawing or for consideration of amendments.
The issue of consulting legislation was related to who initiated the GFIP. Can I clarify myself? The issue of consulting legislation was related to who initiated the GFIP and when was it initiated, as a separate issue from the consultation process that had to take place during the implementation process. which even the portfolio committee raised to FANRA, that we were not satisfied that that consultation process was good enough. I just wanted to clarify that.
Sorry, you raised two separate issues. The one is about Gauteng, which you're quite correct on. But there is another issue. And the other issue is that this is a national law. It's got nothing to do with Gauteng. In fact, I don't think the word Gauteng even appears in this bill because it's not about Gauteng. It's a national law. And so the legislatures that must be included include the others now. Not previously, obviously, I agree with the chairperson that when Gauteng was debating it, it didn't involve the other legislatures. But now it will, because this is going to allow the department that are sitting over there to put an e-toll in KZN. And so it must now be considered by other legislatures. Thanks.
We are on par on that because it is not only KwaZulu-Natal has been to the portfolio committee about consultation, which is why we were putting a lot of emphasis on the amendment that is proposed by SALGA, because we are taking into consideration the presentations that were made by KwaZulu-Natal that the process was going ahead, irrespective of what the legislature in KwaZulu-Natal has pointed out, as well as eThekwini that was going to be affected by the N2 toll road, as well as all the municipalities that fall under Ugu District Municipality, as well as those that are in the Eastern Cape.
Chair, through you, I think our main point really is that this is a piece of national legislation. It will affect all provinces, and therefore the normal process should be followed, which is referral after the National Assembly to the National Council of Provinces. But, you know, clearly the plan is to rush it through so that the assuming, you know, the government obviously feels confident that it's going to win the court case at the end of November. And it's quite clear to us that the intention is to slap the e-tolls in around Christmas time. And, you know, we're very, very concerned about that. This is an unprecedented rush of legislation. And as we pointed out before, what's happening is you are being asked to endorse a process that can't proceed because the legal ducks were not in a row, and now you're being asked to endorse very, very quickly a process to make it possible. And just to elaborate, one of the reasons why it would not be possible to proceed without this act, without this bill, is that the tariffs that have been published for comment are differentiated tariffs, cheaper if you use an e-tag, or cheaper than if you don't use an e-tag. But the legislation doesn't allow that differentiation. This piece of legislation is required in order to make that possible. So you are being asked, as an afterthought, to make the process that has been thought up elsewhere legal. So, you know, this is one of our major concerns, and that this is a piece of national legislation, and the normal procedure would be it must be referred to the NCOP. So, yeah. But just to get back to the question, why were we so quiet? Well, I don't think that's absolutely true. I think all stakeholders, including, for that matter, the Premier of Gauteng, was pretty much unaware of what the impact of this e-toll system was going to be in rands and cents for the user of the road. So I think we all have to bear collective responsibility, but the responsibility lies first and foremost in the hands of SANRAL and the Department of Transport for not at the beginning in 2007, which is when, if you read the document, Madam Chair, what we refer to is at the beginning, is the beginning of the consultation process, not the original conception of the improvement of the roads, but the beginning of the consultation process on the e-tolls. And, you know, we believe that at the time, SANRAL and the department thought that they could get away with very, very quiet consultation. They didn't see this as dramatically different from other forms of tolling. And, you know, we all have to bear responsibility for coming to the party relatively late in terms of really understanding what the impact was. So I don't think we should throw stones at each other. I think as Kapatu we would say we all have to take responsibility. There is a way out. There are other ways of funding this debt, and those other ways should be pursued, and we should find a completely new model of funding our road infrastructure, which takes me to some of the other questions about congestion and so forth. People have, one of the questioners said, look, you know, the roads are fabulous now in Gauteng. You can zip along the R21. Yes, that's true, but let me tell you, in 5 years' time, it will be as congested as it was before the improvements. That's how roads work. The wider you make them, the quicker they fill up. And just making them bigger and better all the time is not a solution to our urban congestion problems. The real solution lies in mass public transport, primarily rail, but also bus. And taxis as a support. Taxis are not mass transport. Taxis take at most 15 people. We're talking about mass transport, one vehicle that carries hundreds of people. So, you know, that's the real solution. And the problem is that we're working in silos. We're putting a huge amount of money. We're prioritizing these big freeways without giving consideration to the real priority, which is for improved public transport, which is not to say we want our freeways to collapse, but we're saying there's a need to reprioritize. And that you know, the answer of a beautiful freeway now is going to, in 5-10 years' time, we're going to be in exactly the same place if we don't do something really urgent about putting in new publicly owned rail network and more subsidized bus routes, preferably publicly owned. So, you know, we need a massive shift. And that takes me, Madam Chair, to your question about private car use and taxis. Let me repeat the statistic. A third of all commuters, and this is from the Household Travel Survey, a third of all commuters use cars. Two-thirds use public transport. Of the two-thirds who use public transport, 60% use taxis. So, roughly the same number of people use taxis as private cars. We have one of the lowest entry levels in terms of income into car usage. Why? Because our public transport is so shocking. People seek to own a car at a much lower income rate in this country than they do in almost any other country in the world. Out of necessity, because that is the way to get to work. So the 60% is not the 60%, it's not 60% of commuters use taxis, it's 60% of public transport users. So what we are saying is that the reality at the moment is that a third of commuters, a third of people who go to work every day, go by private car. And we're saying half of workers, half of employed people, earn less than 3,000 rand a month. Now, the universities who do minimum living levels and poverty lines and so on, they say a person is poor when they earn less than 4,500 rand a month. So that tells us there's about actually 70% of people who earn in this country could be defined as poor. They're living at the margins. They're living in desperate situations. A large part of that poor population uses the private car, not out of choice, out of necessity, because we don't have enough quality public transport. So I don't want to confuse you with all these figures, but all I'm saying is I'm trying to demonstrate that there are many poor people who own and use cars to get to work because of the absence of quality public transport. So that's why the argument that says the user pays, and Chair, I think you asked the question, what is our understanding of the Masakani campaign? We support the campaign, but there are very many ways of interpreting it, and we perhaps have a different interpretation to you. Because if you say those who can pay for the service should pay for it, well, if that is applied to the motorways, then you must have a means test. You must have a gate where people get onto the motorway and you check what is their income. If they are poor, they pay less than if they are rich. The problem with e-tolls is it's the same for everybody, as my colleague Matthew pointed out. There's no differentiation between the rich and the poor on the e-tolls. Everybody's paying the same. So the person who can't afford to pay, who may be the same person who can't afford to pay for water and therefore gets the basic legal minimum requirement, that person actually has no choice but to stay off the motorway. So you're forcing people to remain off the motorway because they can't afford to pay. And that's our big problem. You are taking public space and you are saying this public space only belongs to those who can afford to use it. And we're saying it's a public space, like our parks or anywhere else that is public, and anyone should be allowed to enter. Nobody should be discriminated against. And unless you want to talk about a means test to get onto the road, there's no other way of doing it but to say that it must be free for everybody. So, you know, that's our problem with the e-toll system, that it's exclusionary. The question of public transport exemption, you are going to, in Gauteng, have enormous problems. It's not public transport that is exempted. It's public transport that is registered and legal. Now, we all know, and we're putting our heads in the sand if we deny this, that 40% of all the taxis that operate in Gauteng are currently still operating illegally. Those taxis will not be able to benefit from the free movement on the motorways. So you're going to sooner or later have a huge clash with a big portion of the taxi sector in Gauteng. So again, you know, until that legalization process is completed and sorted out, if it ever will be, this exemption is not going to do what on paper it's designed to do. Because a commuter doesn't ask before he or she gets into the taxi, are you a legal taxi or not? They simply get into the taxi that's available. So, yeah, there are a lot of problems around that public transport exemption in actually administering it, particularly on the taxi side. On the question of how many roads are untarred, look, I mean, we don't have the statistics on hand, but, I mean, we all know that we've got a large number of untarred roads. And, by the way, we shouldn't get hung up about tarred or untarred. What we should really get hung up about is maintained or not maintained, because a good gravel road can often last a lot longer than a good tarred road. It's a question of maintenance, a question of construction. And, yes, there are huge backlogs from the past, and we've got an obligation as a country to make up those backlogs, particularly in the rural areas. But that's a question of overall road strategy, and that's what's absent. That's the problem. That's what's absent in this whole debate, and that's what's absent in the whole construction of the SANRAL model. Because SANRAL is only responsible for national roads. And it's got the luxury of having these fancy ways of generating income and then basically allowing the national roads to get bigger and better whereas the provincial and metro roads don't have the same kind of luxury, and we get this distortion. Again, those, you know, better going to those who already have and worse going to those who don't have. So, you know, in our view, there needs to be a complete rethink about our road strategy, and that needs to also be in the context of the climate change demands, of issues around, you know, can we afford just an escalation of road use as opposed to the other modes of transport and so on. But that's a much wider debate that perhaps we don't have time for today. Are we rejecting the entire bill? Yes, we are rejecting the entire bill, because by withdrawing the bill, you can make e-tolls go away and we can start again to look at how do we pay for the money already spent, how do we use the gantries. There are many, many ways those gantries can be used usefully. They don't have to be a wasted asset. And we can start a proper conversation nationally about our road strategy, where we integrate all the different elements of rural and urban and so forth. I think I've answered the question about when our reference to 2007, and you'll see that in the text. It's specifically a reference to the consultation process. I think I've answered the question of user pays, that the road tolling is a very, very narrow interpretation of user pays, and it's a very individualized interpretation, and we don't accept it's a useful interpretation of the user pays principle. And just to say on that note, that toll roads are unpopular virtually all over the world. In many other countries where tolling has been introduced on a stop-start basis and then withdrawn, because of the massive unpopularity of the system, for the reasons that we raised at the beginning, about exclusion, about people feeling that the public space has been, and access to that public space is being denied. There were a number of questions about the National Credit Act exclusion. The point was made that there's no requirement for the department to publish a full list of the costs of the gantries. I think that's a very important point. In fact, generally speaking, I would say that the public is currently very unaware of what the costs of passing a gantry will be if they don't have an e-tag. The e-tag rates have been pretty widely published. The other rates have not been made generally known to the public. And as I say, it's this very bill that allows for that differentiation. And if you stop the bill, the process won't be able, you know, it won't be possible for the process to continue. The presumption, yeah, do you
want to ask that? Sure. I think, Jefferson, just on the issue of there's two aspects of the bill which shift the presumption of innocence from the prosecution or the accuser to the accused. We've seen it in other legislation coming up. I think the Protection of State Information Bill, that's been a hot issue there, where I think the members have amended it. But for us, that's a shift from the normal legal norms, the constitutional norms, where one is innocent until proven guilty. Here, the accused must prove that they're innocent, not the accused must prove that they're guilty. So you must prove that you didn't know this was a toll road. You must prove that you were the driver. So it's a bit of a shift for us, which is also worrying, Chair. Also, can I say quickly, Chair, I think the one member said that the bill excludes Parliament from being consulted around pricing and regulations, the tariffs, the increases. I think we would share that kind of a concern. Right, there's no restrictions on it. As the member said, you can do it, increase it every day. It can be far above inflation levels, as we've seen with ESCOM, where we've seen that ESCOM DTI itself has complained about the negative impact economically that it's having on the country with these massive increases in electricity prices over the years. I think, Chair, on the issue of whose mistake was it, Comrade Spoon de Bele, when he was Minister of Transport, said he found this in office when he came into office. He viewed it as a mistake. With hindsight, they wouldn't have pursued it. And he promised that this will not be expanded to other provinces. Yet the bill very clearly says it's going to be expanded. And in fact, Gauteng residents could even argue afterwards that, look, it's not fair just to eat to Gauteng. What about Cape Town? What about PE, Durban? And so on. They could argue about discrimination there. I think lastly, Chair, from my side, is that the public is already paying a variety of taxes. Government uses taxes effectively and efficiently. E-tolling very clearly is not an effective or efficient way of generating funds for public goods. So further, it's a very worrying thing. Chair.
Yeah, Chair, I don't think I've got anything further to add at this stage. Thanks very much for the opportunity.
Honourable Zagute, followed by Honourable Duck.
Thanks, Chairperson. I think everyone has a right to their views. So these are Kosatu's views, Chairperson. They have a right to view, to air their views, and to be listened to. Chairperson, my understanding of a poor person is different from what Kosatu is saying. A poor person cannot afford to buy a car. If you earn 4,000 rand, you cannot afford to buy a car. And those poor people are using trains in Gauteng, are using buses, are using taxis. So those people who are using those modes of transport, I classify them as poor working class. They can't afford to buy a car. That's my understanding of a poor person. Then, my comrade here spoke of gravel roads, that if they are well graveled, then they can be used. There's no need for tar road. Then my question is, who deserves to get to use a tar road, and who deserves to use a gravel road? I think the Bill of Rights provides for everyone, that we are all the same. We deserve the same services. Then I think the first toll gate that was built in the country, it was in 1988. And the revenue are collected by private companies, because those toll gates that are there all over the country are privately owned. That is why these levies are increasing every year, and no one is saying anything about them. Yes, you said you have said something about Northwest and Mpumalanga, but you didn't make the impact like you are now with the e-tollings in Gauteng. So your voice is not heard, because if your voice is heard like you are saying, Mpumalanga toll gate from Malelane is 48 rand. To Mashara is 64 rand. Then to Witbank, the Middelburg toll plaza, is 42 rand. Single trips, all of them. So this is what we are saying. Government has reduced the tariffs of each hauling twice. Yet you are saying that, like with the funding model, as to how government is going to generate revenue to pay the debt of this e-tolling. I didn't hear you clearly. You say a fuel levy, of which I don't agree with, because it will affect everyone. It's like you are saying all taxpayers should pay for those roads, of which we don't agree with it. The user must pay. And it's a choice in housing for people to use private cars. It's their choice. I believe the taxi industry have registered. I don't, we are not talking about these small taxis, the Amapelas, which drive locally, transport people from this section of the township to that other section. I mean those taxis that are traveling all over Gauteng are registered. And they are buses, the BRTs, they are trains, they are Gautrain. So Gauteng has a choice to choose which mode of transport to be used. And for the poor, the government has exempted the public transport. So I don't agree with you, my comrade, that you are speaking on behalf of the poor who are using cars, their own cars. No, that's just a big no for me. Then my other question is, with the e-tollings, government is saying that its entity, which is the CBRTA, will be used to collect revenue for the government. Because that is government entity. And that revenue will be used to construct road infrastructure network all over the country. Because we all know, you yourselves know very well, that we have a huge backlog of infrastructure all over the country. So road infrastructure is one of them. We don't have that one. So government must generate funds to make sure that everywhere, every corner of this country has a tarred road, beautiful road where you can drive even if you are asleep. And also the real reason for having this e-tolls was to reduce congestion, accidents, and everything that is there. So we are not in support of something that will come from private companies to come and milk the poor people of this country. So if government is initiating this thing of e-tolling, let it be so that we can be able to develop our country. Because we all know that transport is a heartbeat of this country's economic and social development. Thank you, Chair.
Honorable Daga.
Hi, Chairperson. My colleague has covered me. Thanks.
Chair, allow me please to unpack this poor person. COSATU seems to be very sympathetic about poor people, but putting these poor people in a very, very expensive way. She says a poor person earns about 4,000 downwards. And she even says these people have no choice but to buy cars out of 4,000. These people are paying rent. They have children to send to school. They have children to feed and still pay petrol, still buy a car. And these people are one-third of the population. I disagree.
Honorable
Ollis,
followed by Honorable.
Just 2 points. The research that we've done as the DA indicates that, in fact, by the 2014 election, the Gauteng new freeways are going to reach capacity. Not one day in the future. They're going to reach capacity by the 2014 general election already. They'll be full. And the money we have to pay for these improvements is going to be paid over many, many years. So this method of funding is problematic, and I agree with Kasato on that point. The other point is I disagree with my colleague on the right here, because, of course, that foreign company is taking 9 billion rand to collect the fees. 9 billion, that's how much they're taking. It is a lot of money they're taking out of the system just to do the collections.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, I just want to say that public hearings are meant to get stakeholders to come and make presentations for the committee, so that thereafter the committee will remain and deliberate on those public hearings. And as such, I think as any other stakeholder, COSATU has made that. And there are no winners and losers on public hearings. I think Chairperson, with due respect, I think the COSAD has made its point, and I think we did clarified, because they've got a clear mandate on their presentation on page 10 in terms of the conclusions, what they have concluded upon deliberating and the motivation on the bill. So those grey areas that we would want to have been clarified, we are clarified, and as such, I will not ask any further questions more than to say let's accept the both oral and written submissions, and the committee surely will interact with that chairperson. For further deliberations, maybe we can take that politically outside this meeting, so that we can go into further details, politically speaking, in other matters. Otherwise, in terms of what we were mandated to check, what is the view of COSAD in as far as the transport laws and related matters amendment bill, I think they've made their point very clear. Thank you, Chair.
Thank you. COSAD has indicated that they have time constraints, and they would want to leave. I also want to take this opportunity to.
Chair, if I may just clarify just 2 points. The first one about tarred road and gravel road, let me not be misunderstood. The point I'm making is that maintenance is the critical issue, and that's where we're failing in our roads. So if you've got a tarred road that isn't maintained, it's a terrible road. If you've got a gravel road that isn't maintained, it's also a terrible road. But the critical issue is the maintenance. That's the point I was making. On the question of the poor and cars, the only point we were making is that it's incorrect to say that only rich people use the motorways. The statistics from the Department of Transport show that there are many poor people who do use cars to get to work because there isn't available public transport or for whatever other reason, but there are poor people who use cars, and those people use motorways as well as other roads. That's the only point we were trying to make. So I just wanted to clarify that. The only other point I wanted to make is that the company that has the contract to collect the revenue is a private company, and the details of that contract have not been disclosed. In all the consultations that we've had, it's not clear how much money that company, the ETC, will be making from this whole system. So if I could just leave it at that. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you. I would like to take this opportunity to thank COSATU for the presentation and their strong views on this matter. And I think that there is nothing wrong in having different opinions, because different opinions and different views enrich us, because development is a process. It is a continuous process where you will plan, implement, and reflect. When you reflect, you are actually looking at whether you got what you expected to get, and if not, what areas of improvement you should be making to improve the situation and close the gap. And I think that is exactly what we are doing here. We are looking at how best we can improve in the process of transport infrastructure development and transport services provision in the country. I, however, would want to make 3 points. From the portfolio committee of the the oversight work that we have done. And we would appreciate if COSATU can also read documents of the portfolio committee and recommendations and issues that we raise. This committee pushed for the establishment of a road maintenance fund. And that fund has been made available, approved by cabinet, and allocations made. It was precisely based on our observation of how roads are deteriorating, both in urban and rural areas. But as I have said in the past, in my previous input, that the democratic government of South Africa inherited a country that has got three different levels of services. Inadequate services that require maintenance, adequate services that require maintenance to prevent them from further degradation, inadequate services that needed upgrading and repair, and no services at all. In our visit to mainly poor provinces, presidential poverty nodal point, we came across a municipality in Lusikisiki, and we went to a community in Imuza. The community is down the hill, not because of its choice, and the facility is up the hill, and there's no road connecting the community and the hospital. So sick people are forced to walk, not because of their choice. They did not put themselves there. It is the apartheid settlement patterns that put those people there. Between the hospital and the village, there's a big tree. When people walk up the hill, they get tired. They are sick. They sit under the tree to get rest. And more than 100 have died under the tree, resulting with the tree being called the tree of death. We've been to that area. And when we hear arguments that are saying all of us should pay for 187 kilometers of freeway and make those people wait for more than 30 years before they can get a road provision, not maintenance of a gravel road, just the provision of a road to connect the village to hospital, we wonder whether we have the same understanding of the poor and the uneven levels, inequalities that exist in our country, we wonder. And the submission, unfortunately, is made by COSATU, who represents the working class. The second issue is the definition of the poor and the isolation of one project from the entire service delivery and welfare given to the poor. There are poor people in this country who are called indigent because they cannot afford to pay for services. Those people can't buy cars. And their income is 3,000 rand. They get free water, free electricity. They are from North East School area. Their children are being fed by government in school because there is that understanding of how we distinguish a middle working class person from a poor indigent, working class person. And the definition of a poor person between parliament, between ourselves, particularly the ANC study group on transport, is different from the definition presented by consult of who a poor person is in South Africa. Also, we think that this bill is read in isolation of all other bills which have been passed into act and policies. Because even the transport transformation, what we call the NET, the National Transport Master Plan, is not quoted in its context by COSATU. There is no acknowledgement of the investment that is being done in the railway infrastructure to improve the railway infrastructure. There is no acknowledgement that is paid into the investment made by government in the rehabilitation of the outdated rolling stock, to which there had been no investment for the past 30 years before we took over. There is also no acknowledgement of the acquisition of the new rolling stock. There is no acknowledgement of the improvement of the railway station. There is no acknowledgement of the expansion of the OR Tambo. There is no acknowledgement of the Gautrain and the BRT. In actual fact, we should be using Gauteng Integrated Development Plan. In a comprehensive manner and holistic assessment, so that we can begin to see areas of improvement and also acknowledge the investment that the government has done, and then begin to identify which areas we need to improve on. We agree with the fact that the electronic system, but the ownership of the system is foreign. We totally agree with that, that there is one area that South Africa should be improving on to build its own capacity and develop its own technology. The inclusion of the cross-border is aimed at removing exactly that and bring the capacity within a government entity so as to reduce the dependency on private sector, which results with more costs and leave government entities with no financial capacity. That is what. However, having said all that, we thank COSATU. We will apply our mind on the basis of all presentations put in front of us, those that are for and those that are against, and we will arrive at a determination as a portfolio committee, which is our responsibility as a legislative arm. We make the determination based on what has been presented to us and also how we view the situation moving forward. We would want to thank you and release COSATU. Thank you very much for your presentation.
We would
We would love to respond again, but we'll be here all day if we do that. So thank you very much.
We will break for lunch and come back at 2. When we come back, we will be deliberating as a committee on the presentations that have been made and also the submissions.